Hi, I'm Kristen. I'm a social self-prez 9-wing-1-9-6-3.
Hi, I'm Kaisa. I'm a sexual social 9-wing-8 with the 3 and 5 fixes.
Hi, I'm Sammy. I'm a self-prez social 9-wing-1 with 5-wing-4 and 4-wing-3 fixes. I got like sweaty from laughing. I just like needed my fan. The moment you brought up the story of me, I got sweaty. I was like, oh no.
What did I do?
She's going to define me for me. I don't like that.
That's four pegs.
Yeah.
Don't define me. You don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't. And it'll be interesting when we talk about heart stuff because of we can get into the more nuances of four and what it's exactly doing, and it'll help you on your journey, continuing your journey. What did you said you did look at it a bit. What were you thinking about it?
Frustrated and reactive observation to dream images. The dream ego needs to question their disgust or distaste for the images.
Yeah,
that's kind of what got me thinking. I was like, because I'm not conscious of disgust in my dreams. I think it's more that like it's been hard to think about heart in dreams. I mean, because being heart last, and it's something that kind of gets pushed away always. Like, so I'm just not super aware of it to begin with.
The way that I see that, like, especially in the framing of dreams, like, I know in my experience of you and sharing your dreams, there are times where I can tell you're reluctant in sharing them. Like, you don't want to, but you're going to. And I think too that it's like it feels like there's more risk for like you sharing a dream. Like, there's something there that's a bit more risky than when Kaisa and I are just like, blah, here's a dream.
True, because it does feel like that I'm presenting something that's really true about my inner world, and it's very, I'm very protective over that, you know.
Yeah, and I don't even think that's just an SI thing, because I have SI and I'm like, here, have all my dreams. I don't care.
True.
I think that's it could be around like not even just like your inner world, but like your inner world, and especially with four being withdrawn, like your inner world is part of your image. So how that's being handled, what or what not people see, blah, blah, blah. Like, that could be very subtle things that you're considering when you're talking or sharing them, you know?
That's true. I do remember I had a dream once, and this kind of, if people remember when we interviewed Maggie for her dream, because in her dream it was like this artificial dome, right? And there was all this stuff happening. It was like fake plants, fake scenery, just all this fake stuff. And like, we were talking about that in the context of social blind, but it's also very forefixed. Like,
yes,
the things that most people view as like just real everyday stuff. I don't know how to phrase it, but just the things that most people take for granted, like, I think to four fixers can seem very fake, not like it's not truly, it doesn't match their experience of depth. And I had a dream once where I was in a neighborhood that I lived in, but it was like everything was fake, like fake trees, fake sky, just everything was artificial, and there was something wrong there. Like, the facade was starting to crumble, but I was like the only one who saw it and was like, something's not right here. Like, this is not, you know, so I can see it in subtle ways like that. Just this sense that like, there's more to what's going on than what's being presented. And Yeah.
Well, and that's something I've noticed across the board with four in the heart is a lot of dreams will involve really like, you know, it'll involve that decay and rot and fake or like disgusting. Like there's all this like really gross sort of weird off imagery because it's, and I find that interesting then too, because it's like four wants to kind of uphold some kind of ideal or beauty or whatever. And mm-hmm. in the dream realm, it's kind of illustrating this opposite, you know, of like mm-hmm. that depth is like, you know, every type is doing their shit wrong, but like fours, you know, wanting the image of depth rather than really yeah. knowing what, you know, like feeling what depth is. And so it's interesting then in the dream world that all of this like putrid stuff comes up because it's like, you know, the, even like the inauthenticity or the fakeness or whatever, like that is still a part of you. Like all of those things that you're trying to push away mm-hmm. from are still yeah. operating in you somewhere. And the more that you push away from it, the bigger the shadow of it will grow.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've noticed that's a big similarity with what I've noticed in four. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, like, yeah, I'll have gross and rotting and stuff like that, but it's never like really that important. Like I don't notice it that much. Like it happens occasionally and I can easily reflect on it. Like, but there's something with when I'm reading a, you know, four fix dream, it's just like, oh, this is a different territory than three or two. This is a very different territory. Find it interesting.
Yeah, it's very much like a, in dreams, like the dream ego is like, I'm not a part of this. And everyone else is like doing things that I'm just not relating to. It's happening to everyone else. It's not happening to me.
Right.
So there's just a lot of.
And that out there is actually like hurting me in some way. It's threatening mm-hmm. me in some way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's actually all happening within you.
Yay.
Great. Yeah. I mean, I have to revisit some of these things that I, because some of the things that I initially wrote were just like a pouring out of, well, what I really liked about the heart center. Oh, wait. Okay. Let's back up. Hello. Welcome to Synsomnia. it's just Sammy and I again. Kaisa's, I don't feel like making stuff up. She's doing something for school.
Yeah. Let's tell them the truth this time.
Yeah. I would feel like telling you the truth that she's doing stuff for school and it's very important. So Sammy and yes. I are being the drivers here. So we were talking about the heart center and I wrote something quite a while ago. Like when we were still on the instincts, cause I was getting drawn already to different things. And, one of the things that I loved when you read a lot in Jungian work and other stuff like that, similar stuff, is the idea of the image of a dream and how I think it's interesting that the heart center is also known as the image center. So I just kind of played around with that idea of like what an image really means, not even just in the identity sense, but like what an image can do to the heart. So you think of art, beauty, landscapes, stuff like that, and how much that can provoke a heart response. Like when you think of dreams, you know, I don't know. I think we've all had it and everyone's heard on the podcast, like how much we've cried over dream imagery. Like, you know, the thought of like a dog in a dream, just like, you know, for me, just like wells my heart, you know? So I think like this idea of image, what that means, what we include, like what images provoke us and which ones repel us, like what that world is like and how that operates in the heart space. And because I think, you know, the heart space is also very aesthetic, because when you think of your image or identity in as a heart, you know, type, it's focusing a lot of or on aesthetics, you know. So I kind of just played around with that, and I feel like I've developed a lot more ideas. I mean, we all have since then, so I'm sure this will be another 40-page document when we're done.
Definitely.
Yeah. But I mean, I also kind of the same with the body center, and what we'll also do with the head center is I think one of the most interesting ways to work with it in your dreams is not just looking at the dream itself, but looking at your waking response, like your ego's response to the dream. So I think, you know, we kind of incorporated that with the body center of like what images and symbols feel like in the body and what the body feels like, which then produces these symbols or images. So the heart's kind of similar, where it's like, you know, you could have really touching dream imagery like we've talked about on the pod, and it opens your heart, but then you have other dream imagery that, you know, disgusts you. And then what does that mean? Because disgust can be a heart response as well. So yeah, like I wrote a bit about it, and but it's kind of like I would imagine it's more gonna be like what each type and what anybody listening, like how they feel connected to their heart versus like what your heart center is doing egoically. So dreams are going to try and show the thing that will actually open your heart and what, you know, movements need to be done to open that, rather than continuing the kind of ego thing of like, this is my identity, this is my image, and this is not, and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's so kind of binary in a way that I think with working with dreams, it opens up to what the heart really means, or what the heart needs, rather than these kind of defenses against it in a way. So yeah, did you listen to the thought of the heart that I did, or part of it at all?
No, but I'd found the, I found it online.
Ooh, nice.
The, what do you call it? The
written.
Yeah.
Essay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was beautiful. We can have a whole dissection. We don't have to do it today whenever you have time, but like that to me was, if anybody wants to read it, it's The Thought of the Heart essay by James Hillman, and we'll go over it too, because it's like rich with with like where the heart's role in a very symbolic or archetypal kind of way, and how we're fucking it up all the time, which is what I like the most to learn about. But I thought too, I wrote defining terms, because I wondered if we could talk a bit about, like, I think one of the things I've noticed with heart stuff is that terms can get kind of jumbled, like what exactly is shame versus then what everyone will kind of go on about it, and if we can make those differences so we know what we're actually looking for.
Because
I think shame and then guilt are two different things, and I don't think guilt is something that the heart experiences. So the most simple way to kind of separate them is that shame is the internalized sense of disgust. So that's like how I feel disgusted with myself, versus guilt is an externalized sense of disgust. So it's more like socially, it's imposed on you rather than it's something about you. It's kind of like a moral issue, like you feel guilt because you did something wrong, whereas like shame is going to be like, I just am wrong. Like, there's nothing I did wrong, I just am. And that's why, like, I wanted to know, because I know you watched some stuff on disgust, and because we initially talked about it with body stuff briefly, but then we were like, oh, we'll save that for heart stuff, because I feel like this is gonna have a lot to do with like childhood stuff, because internalized shame has to occur usually when you're a kid and like your mom looks at you a certain way or treats you a certain way and you internalize that as just you're disgusting. Like, mm-hmm. I am disgusting because my mother finds me disgusting. And also I noted as well, just like feeling not worthy of attention, which is where like heart kind of overlaps with social in that way. So I don't want to like, yeah, I want to differentiate that it's not social attention, but it's just like me as a person, me period, like is worthy, I guess, of existing. No, I don't know if you wanted to add things that you've like listened to or watched or read that felt relevant to that.
Yeah, it's been a few months since I watched anything related to that and like really thought about it.
I remember there being like you had a very strong response to it because of that idea of disgust.
Okay, I remember now kind of like what I was working with. It was like, for me, it started with learning about something called the freeze response and how that can be just kind of how we shut down our experience of our bodily sensations. And I think the way it was tied to disgust and shame was that it must have been something like the shame was too overwhelming to feel. Maybe, I don't completely remember.
That would make sense.
I do remember personally from a young age, feeling shame and disgust with certain bodily sensations, and that caused me to shut down and like disconnect from sensation a little bit. And then that pattern kind of repeated itself around any sort of feeling of rejection, which I then internalized and told myself, like, well, for this to be happening to me, it must be something wrong with me, not realizing that it's another person's projection and it has nothing to do with me. So
that was
a big thing.
And I remember too, when you were talking about it, that also pointed me way more to four, because it's like four kind of internalizes the brokenness, and it's just like, I'm just broken. Like the image is broken.
Yeah,
it's disgusting. It's whatever, that it recognizes the shit in it. Whereas like, you know, two on the other hand is going to completely reject that and be like, oh no, I don't want to feel that shame. And it's going to like impose its own image of not being disgusting. and three is just kind of like in the middle, where it's like, yes, I could feel that, but like, I know I can do better. I know I can show better. And that's also avoiding the feeling of shame, because it's trying to just then constantly adapt to its external environment or whatever, in order to uphold its image.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's why I think too, like, every type, no matter what, is avoiding shame. Like they're not.
Yeah. That's
really,
yeah, that's key.
Yeah. They're not feeling into like what it means to actually be disgusting. Like, even if four's image is disgusting, like there's still, it's like overcompensating for the actual feeling then, because like every type is being neurotic about it in some way. Mm-hmm. And it's just like consistently avoiding feeling the actual like implications of shame. So that's why I even wrote like, like as a baby, you smile at your mom, but she doesn't smile back. So it's an internalized experience of I'm disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
So how to deal with the mother possibly being repulsed by you. Who you are as a person is being devalued. And so then to differentiate it from guilt, again, this is not something you really can get forgiveness for. Like if you're guilty of something and then you make amends or whatever, like you can ask for forgiveness, blah, blah, blah. Like this isn't something you can search for forgiveness, because it's not a moral thing. Like I'm not valued. I'm not worthy. I am repulsive, whatever it may be. So therefore the ego's way of, you know, going about this and avoiding the shame is to craft the image in order to do something about it. Like I, you know, if I can have control over my image and just continue to craft that in a safe, whatever a type might think is safe, then I don't have to feel that shame. But then that's when symptoms and neurosis occur because of the wound of shame not being felt. So yeah, I wrote a bit about each one, but not really too much because I feel like we can expand on those at some other time. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, two is going to cut off shame. It's rejection, super ego and positive outlook. So I refuse to be disgusting. And then this is where pride fills in. Like I'm going to do everything I can not to feel shame within myself. I'm going to craft the image that, you know, I'm beyond that or something. Three, being attachment, competency, assertive. I will make myself something not shameful. I thought about that and like I attach to what seems unable to shame. I think that's where like three can feel really blank in the heart space for most people because it's just kind of letting something else fill in the image rather than really feeling into it yourself because you're, you know, avoiding that in a way. You're kind of playing it safe. And then four, frustration, reactive, withdrawn, recognizes the shame and it's something it tries to move away from. I come from a place that is shameful, but through my specificity, you won't even see my shame. Over-focused on the shame, trying to idealize or beautify it. So, you know, that one I think is a bit more exact with imagery and stuff like that. Because there's going to be, I mean, two and yeah. four are going to have much, you know, starker shadows of these kinds of things that might show up in dreams. But those were just really small ones for the meantime, just to kind of get what this idea of shame is.
Mm-hmm. No, but they're still very evocative and they get the point across really well, which is hard to do when dealing with this subject matter.
It is, yeah, because I think too, like, you know, shame, it's such a intense, it can be a very intense experience, like to really feel, you know, what you haven't allowed yourself to feel and recognizing it, like kind of naming it. It's kind of the idea too of like naming emotions that come up. Like you don't even, like you're so swept up by them that it's hard to stop and actually name them and where they're coming from and then what to actually do about that. It's just all becomes a part of who you are or your image or whatever. That I think it's just like something that's severely lacking in our culture. Like, because even you think of like common therapeutic settings, like they want you to feel good. Like they also don't want you to feel the shame because they want you to be positive.
Yeah, sometimes.
Or cry or something. Yeah, like, oh, cry because it's sad. But like, you know, the heart is something that like it can feel really intensely and it can feel disgusted, like at itself or others or other things or whatever. Like there's negative emotions. I think that's where, you know, with four in the space of the heart, like there are very negative things that are not as encouraged to recognize or feel within people in these kinds of processes.
Yeah, that reminds me. I was listening to, you recommended an episode of the Jungian Life podcast on unrequited love. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a quote that stuck with me. It says, love cannot thrive unless it is responded to. But you could replace the word love with any emotion.
Right.
It's true. You have to respond to what you're feeling and actually see it, you know, not in a judgmental way, but just see it.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. you know, otherwise it's going to get lost and you're, you know.
Right.
So I just.
Yeah. Because it's similar. It's similar to with the body that, like, it does not have words. You know, like mm-hmm. it's still pre-verbal. I think that's why like the body and the heart can be kind of similar or like not similar, but like they can be worked on easily together. I mean, all centers will be worked on together, but like especially when you're doing a lot more pre-verbal kind of work. Like even when I was reading that book on trauma in the body, and one of his exercises was to look at images and to just sense your body's responses to images. Like that is like your heart and your body working together in a way. Mm-hmm. And even like, you know, obviously the heart is the part of the body, but like it is, you think of like your heart and all of the, like the blood that comes out and like is pumped through with your heart. Like it's all kind of a part of that system. Like the head will be too, and we'll wrap that up and, you know, when we get to the head center, but like the body and the heart, you know, cohabitate the same sort of yes. spots and are used together.
I'd say so. It's like, I don't remember what episode we did this in, but we found those images that disgusted us so much.
Yeah, like we,
that's exactly
like a body response to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a, yeah, it's a conversation kind of going on between the body and the heart, and it's pre-verbal. I think that's why, like, you know, yeah. sensation is something you can sit there and close your eyes and you can work on, and it's, you know, very body, that it's body based where you're sensing. But then, you know, with heart as well, yeah, like you're not really using words. Like there can be words that speak to the heart. We had that whole conversation before, and yeah, my love letter, but
yeah. It's tricky because it's like the heart, it's a felt sense, but it's not felt, like, as it's different from the felt sense in the body.
Yeah, yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's impossible to define. Like I actually, just to give an example,
mm-hmm.
a few weeks ago, I was in bed laying down, and I was in a different bedroom than my bed. It was like I was in the guest bedroom mm-hmm. in my parents' house. And I like laid down to go to sleep. And I don't know why, but in that moment, I got like a felt sense of what image I felt inside, mm-hmm. and also what was being presented on the outside. And it came in words, but it also kind of came in literal imagery. And it was just like fragile, delicate person, not super strong, but just kind of like, I don't know how to phrase it. Like imagine like one of those old cartoons of like a princess in distress or something. Like that's what it felt like. And she's just like sighing, like, or she's laying like just
yeah, on the bed, like, just
yeah, like that's kind of what it felt like. And I'd never gotten that sense before. Like I maybe like understood like cognitively that's mm-hmm. what was going on, but that was the first time I felt it like in what I thought was my heart center. And I was yeah. like, oh, this is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a felt sense, but it's not. It's
also, you know, an image.
It's a literal image. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's how I found my worm tongue. It's like, yes. Once I yeah. put my body in the position, the image just appeared. I'm just mm-hmm. like, oh my God. And I've had that's happened quite a few times where an image constellates. I like that word. When an yeah. image will constellate. That it just kind of comes together out of nowhere, and there's no words necessary or anything like that, but it is just like
it just breaks up.
Yeah, and there are times where I have that, and I like I don't know what it means, and then like, you know, eventually maybe the meaning will come, but it's always just like that heart level. And I've even done mm-hmm. you know, there are some, I might have mentioned this before, but like there are some dreams that I've been, you know, interpreted, or conversations that even we've had or something. And I'll kind of feel it in with when I read a dream, where it's just like, I don't even want to put words to this, as in like, I don't want to analyze this. Like, you should just be with these images, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there are some dreams.
That's what James Hillman says. That's like his big thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's the image is healing in itself. Like, it's, I don't think you need words for it. I think it would ruin it to pick it apart. Mm-hmm. That there are just some that are like, it speaks for itself just being with it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I'm also reminded of like what we're saying with the body and the heart in Josh Levine and John. Lukovich's Enneagram school. Sorry.
So what's that guy's name?
I know what his name is. It's just, am I pronouncing it right?
I'm just
I gotta defend myself. In their Enneagram school course on what was it like the they've only done one core, or no, they've done...
Yeah, the object relations one.
The first one they did, on object relations.
Developmental centers, that's what it is.
Yes. Like Josh was saying, like, the centers arise, like, actually in a sequence. It's like, first the body, then the heart, mm-hmm. then the mind.
Yeah.
And so it's like, the heart center, it needs the body center mm-hmm. to operate, to mm-hmm. perceive a self-image. And I feel like I forget that sometimes, like it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why they're like all operating with each other, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, I even think of like when I'm reading something like really good, like just really like I'm reading words, but my heart is kind of like feeling the image of those words. And then the body's like completely responding to that as well. Like, there's a sensation component to it as well. And it's just like all three centers. And even too, when you're writing down a dream as well, like you're going to have like, you know, your body's response to it, like maybe of, you know, tenseness or something like that. There's an image involved, your heart's responding, you're writing it, there's words that need to describe the experience. Like, it's all three centers are activated in some way. It's just kind of like with us, you know, singling them out, we're looking at what specifically it is that they're mm-hmm. doing. But yeah, I have two dreams I can share that actually occurred when I was listening to the Big Hormone Enneagram episodes on heart stuff. Maybe like a couple months ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just found them very interesting. And we'll get into, and we were going into the body center at this time. So it was kind of like, you know, these kind of go hand in hand in a way. The one thing, like, they were talking about heart last and like the implications of that in culture and whatever. And I remember myself having kind of like a reaction to heart last, like not really developing aesthetically. Like, it's kind of just going with whatever the culture is about or whatever. Like, they're not really opening their heart to respond to beauty or not beauty or something like that, which I agree with. I mean, just look outside and how fucking ugly our buildings are. Like, so I agree, but I'm like, okay, like, but I'm a very image-based person, so it's kind mm-hmm. of like you know, I was like, I don't know if I really like identify with that or something.
I don't think you'd relate to that. You're also like, also just to say, they on the podcast, like John, Emeka, and David, they all have Savior SE.
Right.
So, you know, mm-hmm. when you have Savior SI, the sensory is introverted, it's a little different.
It is very different. Yeah. But I did have a dream in response that I found fascinating. Well, because I started thinking about, like, I could really easily see it in my family. Mm-hmm. That, like, my family is the kind where it's, like, beauty's a little, like, how do I say it? like it's pretty standard. Like it's not like I don't really know if it's if they're finding the things beautiful or not. Like, and I talked about this and I like thought about it and I'm like, you know, because my mom will, you know, get like, you know, country kitsch kind of stuff. And then, but then like she'll find something really beautiful, like a picture of a fairy or something. Like it's just like, you know, like there's the, it's a mixed bag of like, you know, this looks nice in my house kind of thing. And I noticed that my dad just like, he's just the kind where it's like, give me my favorite sports team on like pillows and blankets and like we're good, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's just like, okay, like, yeah, heart lasts, it's alive. You know, what does that mean for me? And I had this dream. I could not tell you, like, I can't tell you what it means. I have no fucking idea, but it's so interesting that I had this dream that like my dad was standing there and he was like pointing at this like bench. Like my mom, you know, has this, has always had this thing with like wooden furniture. And so she has like, well, in the dream, she had like a wooden bench and it just had like, you know, kitschy kind of stuff on it, like those rustic stars and like a flag with chickens on it or something. Like, like just, these are just things, things on this wooden bench that were like her aesthetics. And my dad was pointing at it and he just says in the dream, he says, this is why I'm not in touch with my archetypal queen. Isn't that bizarre?
What? That's so specific and like relevant, but it's like your dad is what the one saying.
I thought it was fascinating.
Oh my God.
I know. It was so straight, but like so on point.
Yeah, like so, so on forward. Point. There's mm-hmm. no distortion, just straight, like here it is. That's so wild.
It was. I can't even remember if I had the thoughts then about my family. I'm pretty sure I had them before. And mm-hmm. then I had this dream. But like it's so beautiful to, because he was upset. Like in the dream, he was just like frustrated with this. And so it's just like, wow. Like, yeah. Like I don't even know where to really go. But I just thought it was so neat. I was like, actually, that's a lot I could work with right there with that. And then I have another one. And, oh, was this one before or after? I can't remember if it was before or after. But I remember thinking a lot about the heart center the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I think I was getting kind of frustrated about it. And we were doing body center stuff. So this is where like the two kind of combine, because we were also doing body center stuff. And I'm like, I'm frustrated with both of these centers because I'm like automatically knowing it's going to be hard work or whatever that I would, you know, try and figure out what the dream world is on about that. And I had this dream where like, this was so creepy. I shared this with you when I did have it, that it was the one where I was like in my house, and I don't often have dreams where it looks exactly like real life, but this one looked exactly like my house. And I was in the living room, like talking with my roommate, and we were like discussing something. And I don't think anything really important, but then we start hearing the door handle move and we look at each other because it's like, we're both here. We're the only ones who have keys to this place. So like now we're freaking out, like who the fuck's opening our door? We've always locked it. And so the door opens and it's me standing there. And I'm now looking, like me in the house is staring at me at the door, and me in the house is just filled with rage. Like
I remember this now. Yeah.
Yeah. I am so angry about this me at the door. And the me at the door was like totally cool. She was just like, oh, hey, how's it going? Like so happy to see me. But I wanted to like murder her. I was like, you're about to die. Like, I was so angry. And it was just fascinating, like thinking of body and image, and literally like there's my body and there's me, and I'm like angry at it, which is like obviously telling. I mean, at the time I was just like pissy anyway.
Yeah. That's so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like trying to think, like, I don't know if I've ever had a dream where I've like witnessed myself like from the third person. Like, that's a really intense.
Oh no, that was shocking. I woke up like terrified. I was like, I have a doppelganger out there. Like, oh my God, it was terrifying. But cool at the same time. Like, it was very like a numinous kind of experience. Like, it felt so real because it was my house. Like, it wasn't, you know, my house, but it didn't really look like my house. Like, no, this was actually my house.
That does sound scary though. Cause like, am I like, you're just the feeling of like, who is behind that door? Like, it can't be any one of us. And then it's literally you. You're like, oh,
never mind. Yeah, it was very, very bizarre. But again, even too, it's just like, when I had thought about it then the next day, especially with all of like the heart and body stuff, I think it is just like, I am very reluctant to see myself. I think, you know, with being Bermuda, it's like, I am used to, and social, that like, I'm very used to interpreting how other people view me and adapting to that, or, you know, like, even if it's a negative thing, it's not like, there are many times there where I've adapted to people's images. Like, if I'm, you know, dumb or mean or something, I mean, as much of as a 9 could be mean, but like, do you know what I mean? Like, I've had people that don't like me, and I'm like, usually I adapt to it. Like, okay, yeah, I'm, you know, not the person to like or whatever. Like, I haven't really allowed something to hit me in such a way that, you know, like, I can imagine with 4 or 2, like, it's a very crafted image. So when things hit you in such a way that isn't aligned with your crafted image, it's a big deal. Whereas with 3, I feel like maybe not all 3 influence, but like with 3, I feel like it's not as much as a risk. So you're kind of dodging things a bit more. Like, things have surely hurt me and stuff like that, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that there's like that, both of those dreams just had such a strong response to them. And I think when you do dream work, it really does hit your heart center a lot more. I was just like blown away by those.
I think with what you're saying, it also reminds me of like just Demon DI in OPS 2. You know, demon identity, or what is it? Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it identity? Yeah.
Decider?
Well, right. It's your decider functions. But I think, yeah, because it's like tribe versus identity. I think that's the name they have.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Self, tribe over self, self over tribe.
Oh, self. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too, because that's, yeah, my OPS type has a bigger struggle with those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. But you do have save your sleep, so you have
you can. There's something. That,
yeah.
But yeah, I had that, and I also thought of, like, you know, we don't have to get into it, but the one that you had sent after the saga that we, on our last recording. You had another one that was like in a school again, and there was a romance involved with a professor. Oh no, it was a priest.
My priest.
Oh, your priest.
The priest of my heart. That was a crazy dream.
Yeah.
You gave like the most beautiful, heart-wrenching response to that. I cried.
Oh,
and
good.
I never cry with dream interpretations, but I cried with this one.
Oh, good. Because I had just finished recording Thought of the Heart, so I was like in the mood dramatic. Like,
can I send you like a very you know, emotional, dramatic, touching like interpretation? I'm like, yes, please. Like, I love that. Like, and I was like, oh my God, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever read. But it also broke my heart.
It was so beautiful though, and it's basically to fill the listeners in, because we don't have to read the whole thing. Maybe we can have a story time again with Sammy's dream.
Maybe
that was also kind of a saga, but I remember it being like there was like this love affair with this priest, and like And like, some, you know, people were going to find out. And so he like turned you invisible, and you had to keep saying to yourself that you're invisible, which was like triple withdrawn hell. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And it was like so emotional. And like at the end, you like couldn't find your home because he had disappeared, and you had to keep telling yourself you were invisible. And it was just like, oh my God, what is going on, Sammy? But it was beautiful because then I have this quote on my website by Hodorowski. I can quick read because, I mean, it's appropriate for everything that we're talking about. I don't even remember where I found it, but he has this quote: "Let the inner God that is in each one of us speak. The temple is your body and the priest is your heart. It is from here that every awareness must begin." And I just like, I think I included that. I did, yeah, in your response, because it's like literally, right? Like, we're getting into the heart center. I just read a thing about the heart, and you were like, you know, there's this quote with the priest is your heart, and it's like, oh my God. And she has a priest in her dream, and like, he's has priest your heart.
I wanted to fuck this priest, you guys. Like, at this priest, this most beautiful man I'd ever seen. I was like, oh my God. It was someone's dad. Like, it was this guy that I hated. It was his dad. So
perfect. Even better. Yeah. Included in the romance novel.
Yeah. No, but yeah, that there was shame. There was lots of shame in the dream. Yes. I remember, like, towards the end, it was these people, classmates who had found out about the affair, like, you should be ashamed of yourself. You know, and I was like,
oh. And yeah, that's that social overlap of like how people will see you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've had lots of shame too in dreams and stuff. And it's always very interesting to think about, like, to really feel what that is and what it's, I think too, like, in that dream specifically as well, like, things just like went wrong. Like, I could just feel like how upsetting and depressing, like, it all took this very dark turn at the end. I'm just like, oh my God. And that's why I wrote this like very uplifting thing, because it's like, I want you to be with the priest. Like, why wouldn't you be with the priest? Who gives a fuck what other people say? It's your heart.
Myself for social, like, you had a wife and kids, like,
I'd ruin his stability.
Yeah, literally. His career would be in shambles. It's just funny. Oh my God. Yeah
when I think that's like, you know, even to the, we'll get in, you know, we'll get deep into like heart and aesthetics and emotion and feeling, whatever. But even just the idea of the priest, like, there can be kind of like a devotional quality to the heart and whatever the heart is aimed towards. And maybe we can too also separate this from the sexual instinct as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's going to, I mean, again, like, I feel like every center has every instinct. They're all operating together. But like, there's something in that I find interesting. And when you listen to the thought of the heart as well, you know, take notes or let me know what you think or something. Because there's some stuff in there that I find really interesting in, you know, context of beauty and what that is, but then also the heart responding to things that are not beautiful and what that means. And also like that idea of when your heart really follows something or is into someone or something like that, where like something doesn't work out, like, not to feel as if you betrayed yourself, because to think you understand where your heart, like, what your heart even wants in the first place. Do you know what I'm trying to say is like, say you like someone, like, your heart is just like, oh, that, you know, I want that. Like, it's pumping for this person. And then, you know, a year goes by, you break up and you're like, oh, I've betrayed myself. They've done all these terrible things and I should have known from the start. And, oh, stupid heart, what did you think, kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm understanding what he's phrasing correctly, like, your heart still chooses those things for a reason, you know? Like, there can be the naive heart, but it's still the heart. Like, there's, the heart is still legitimate in its choices. even if you don't understand it. So it's just kind of interesting as well with like when people talk about when you betray your heart, like what does that really mean? Like, I feel like we could definitely get into that too.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just thoughts. Was there anything you wanted to say about why you're so excited about doing the Heart Center?
I don't think so. I know I am excited. Well, I'm excited because it's the center I feel the least in touch with. And I want to see what'll happen
mm-hmm.
as we go into it more and like what comes up.
Yeah. I'm excited because it feels kind of, you know, like once we started diving into the body center and just how like expansive it was, like it just feels, the heart center feels like it could expand into many interesting places. So that's what I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Once Kaisa hops on, I think she'll really love this center too.
I think so too. I'm curious to know what she has to say because she has, she's heart second. So maybe it's easier for her to articulate this stuff.
Yeah, right.
Than it is for us.